Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. I bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is foreign encounters. Each of my guests will describe something unusual or foreign that we're encountering today. My first guest is a currency trader in New York. The U.S. dollar is gaining strength because of events unfolding in Japan. We'll analyze the currency flows of the yen back to Japan and speculate what this might mean for the U.S. dollar and other world currencies. My second guest has spent his life investigating unexplained mysteries, both in the United States and abroad. He's the host of a popular radio program, Dr. Peter Shields' World of Unexplained Mysteries. We'll examine some of the world's great archaeological sites and discuss what influence, if any, aliens had on their construction. My third guest is the Director for Public Communications of the World Nuclear Association, a very busy man recently. We'll discuss the Fukushima Daiichi power plant issue going on in Japan right now to understand the lessons from this particular disaster. My first guest, Joel Borshoff, is president and founder of IMEX. The company began in 1989 based on the principle that smaller and mid-sized companies deserve the same foreign exchange advantages traditionally enjoyed by the world's largest firms and financial institutions. Joel began his career with Commerce Bank HG, which is a giant German bank. He moved to J. Aaron & Company, which is now a division of Goldman Sachs & Company, where he established their foreign exchange trading desk. Joel's reputation as one of the foremost authorities in the field of foreign exchange led him to progressively higher executive positions within other prestigious firms, including Rothschild Incorporated, Farman & Company, which is now a unit of London-based ED&F Man Limited. Joel has co-authored the cross-rate currency futures contract for the Minneapolis Twin Cities Board of Trade, which was approved by the United States Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And while that sounds like a mouthful, that is a very big accomplishment for him. He's also written numerous articles and papers on the subject of foreign exchange and is a noted speaker for the professional and corporate group. Joel received his MBA from Bernard M. Birch College, which is the city of university, the University of New York. Welcome to the show, Joel. Joining us right now from New York is Joel. Hi, Joel. How are you?
Hey, Bill. How have you been?
Joel, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Joel's on. Okay, Joel, I'm not hearing you. Are you there, Joel?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
This is odd because I'm hearing Joel perfectly
okay,
well.
Joel, are you there?
I'm still here.
Oh, there you are, Joel. Sorry.
I haven't left yet.
Okay, good. And my apologies that it was problems with my headset. So there we go. Welcome to the show, Joel. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. It is an unusual phenomenon that we're going through right now with the Japanese market, and I want to come to that first. But before we dive into that, Joel, let's just set the stage for our listeners who might be tuning in. Currency trading, which is what you're engaged in, is a $3.9 billion a day.
No, I don't mean to correct it. It's $3.9 trillion.
Trillion with a T.
Trillion with a T.
I mean, that is an staggering amount of dollars and currency being exchanged each day. Currency
is not a stock exchange or commodity exchange that comes close to those numbers.
Not even. No, that's incredible. Currency exchange drives the global economy. It allows businesses to operate internationally. But here's the interesting part of your exchange. It is completely unregulated. Currency trades in 24-hour days, so it's nonstop worldwide. And banks, interestingly enough, derive 25% of their annual profits from currency exchange fees and often charge their customers premiums of 1 to 3% on top of whatever the exchange rate is. So why should the average listener listening to the sound of our voice be concerned with currency trading?
Well, to say the least, we are a global economy, and at the very, very least, we're affected and influenced by what's happening in all of the regions of the world. When that taken into consideration, and the fact that the U.S. is a consumer-driven economy, that means 70% of our economy is consumers bought, purchased, and we purchased an amazing amount of product from overseas. So every time the dollar goes up or down, we are affected. When the dollar goes up, we get a bigger bang for our buck, and we are able to keep inflation to a certain extent under control. When the dollar is going down, these goods are costing us more money. So each individual that turns around and is buying these goods and money's coming out of his pocket and the dollar is weaker, to that extent, their discretionary income is now cut by that loss of the value of the dollar. And they have less money to spend on other things. So they are walking around, whether they're buying groceries or buying gas for their car or buying goods, they are impacted by the value of the currencies of the countries that they're buying.
All right, Joel. So just to put it into real simple terms for me, if I go to Walmart and I buy an inflatable pool at Walmart that's made in Japan, if there's a strong dollar, that inflatable pool is less expensive relative to some of the other products that are there. And if it's a stronger dollar, then that inflatable pool is more expensive. Do I have it right?
That's correct. It should be based on the purchasing power of the dollar.
All right, purchasing power of the dollar. Now, what makes this interesting and what makes this newsworthy, Joel, and of course you know this is the reason I brought you on the show, with the disasters going on in Japan, it's creating some very unusual dynamics in the world currency markets. And the Japanese citizens right now are repatriating their yen back to Japan. So first of all, explain what I mean by what I just said, and then why do the Japanese want the yen back in the country so badly?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because it has a ironic twist. First of all, it's March, and March is the end of the Japanese year. So many Japanese corporations are required to bring back their money back to Japan. So automatically, that creates a supply and demand factor. It's amazing, if you really want to take 2 seconds to think about it, that there are so many things impacting and influencing, let's say, currency markets, but right now it goes back to your basic economics 101 theory, supply and demand. And since right now there is a huge demand for Japanese yen by, one, the Japanese corporations are repatriating their money, number one. Number two, insurers are bringing a lot of money into Japan, buying yen to pay for all the damage that's there as well. So you have those two factors in place. Now, number three, which is something that's not being taken into consideration, I think, that you've seen the stock market today. The stock market, the Nikkei, improved and moved up a little higher.
6%, I believe.
5 days, yes. But the last 4 days, 5 days, it's lost 18-19%. Now, if I was in charge of a hedge fund, or a speculator, I'd be looking at all these quality stocks that are out there and knowing it's only a matter of time before Japan gets back on its feet again, and I would see an opportunity to buy all these stocks, again, needing Japanese yen to purchase, all of these stocks that have been taking such a major nosedive. So you have all of these influences coming in, again, supply and demand, while the Japanese government, on the other hand, is trying to stabilize the economy, and they've been putting billions and billions of dollars of yen into the marketplace to improve the liquidity, to stabilize and calm the stock market, and also to stabilize and calm the currency market, because Japan is primarily, their economy for the last several years has been driven by their trade surplus, and to the extent that the Japanese yen has gotten so much stronger that hurts all of the Japanese corporations in selling. So here you have the government putting in billions and billions of dollars trying to keep the yen weaker, and you have all of this money flowing in, or the anticipation of all this money flowing in, so in effect pushing the yen higher. So you have two forces fighting each other right now, and right now the supply and demand factor is moving more on the side of the repatriation of the funds, the speculators, and the fact that all of these corporations as well is trying to bring back the money to help build up the companies that are hurting over there.
Wow.
So you have all of those factors playing into that island of Japan right now, and it's amazing. It really is.
We're talking to Joel Borshoff, everybody, who's president of IMAX, an international currency trading company, and we're talking about the impact that the disaster in Japan is having on the currency markets. So, Joel, I get it from your explanation, which was very thorough. Thank you for that. I get what's happening with the yen, but what does the repatriation of the yen back into Japan have on other world currencies, particularly the U.S. dollar and the euro?
Okay, well, the situation is when the money comes back into Japan and the yen gets stronger, it's not just getting stronger against the U.S. dollar. It's getting stronger against the euro. It's getting stronger against the other currencies as well. And again, you know, I just used the explanation of the Japanese exporters having a disadvantage by having a higher yen versus the dollar. It falls into the same category when their currency gets stronger against their other trading partners, whether it's in Asia or whether it's in Europe, because to the extent that the yen got stronger against the dollar, it got stronger against the euro, so it made the Japanese exporters less competitive, or will make them less competitive, selling their goods to Europe as well. So it's basically what's happening to the U.S. is basically also going to happen to or against the U.S. For the Japan, it's going to happen the same thing with Europe. But here's something to take into consideration, that Japan imports almost all of their food. They import a tremendous amount of oil. At least they'll have a stronger currency to pay for those goods as opposed to a weakened currency. But if you ask Japanese businesses, you know, under normal conditions, what would they prefer? They would prefer a weaker yen.
Yeah, okay, that makes some sense. We're talking to Joel Borshoff, everybody. We're talking about international currency exchanges. Joel, it is fascinating, no question about that. Now, I want to ask you about inflation, because there are all sorts of conflicting points of view among the different talking heads about inflation. Ben Bernanke says the economy shows no signs of inflation. Others say it's just a matter of time before inflation hits. And let's just use Japanese currency as an example. When I was traveling to Japan about a decade and a half ago, 15 years ago, we'd get 126 yen to the dollar. Today, I saw the exchange rate is only 80 yen to the dollar. So we're getting fewer yen than we did 15 years ago. What is your perspective, or what's the real story behind inflation from a currency trader's perspective?
Okay, well, that's a major issue with regards to value and determination of where money is going when it comes to currency. Okay, inflation generally, when you have higher inflation, it generally generates higher interest rates. And when there's higher interest rates and there's a higher yield, a lot of times speculators say, okay, where can I put my money to earn a higher interest? There's something called the carry trade. And I want to get back to the other thing in a few seconds regarding inflation and Ben Bernanke in the United States, because that's very, very interesting as well. But regarding, let's say, the dollar and the Japanese yen, okay, the Japanese yen was used what's called as a carry trade. A carry trade is where you take a currency, you borrow a currency, a low interest rate currency, you sell it, you then turn around and buy a higher-yielding currency, whether it be the U.S. dollar, which isn't such a high-yielding currency now, but let's say Australian dollar, New Zealand dollar, the Canadian dollar, Brazilian real, where interest rates are higher. You turn around, you buy those local currencies, you invest it or put it into the banks or the bonds, you get a much, much higher yield, and you just have to hope that, you know, the yen doesn't appreciate as much as the differential of the yield that you're earning in this higher thing. So that's, in effect, the aspect of how the carry trade works. Now, to the extent that the dollar is weaker against the Japanese yen, we buy goods, we in effect are importing inflation. So we're raising the cost of inflation in the United States. Now, when they say that there is low inflation, I don't agree with that at all. And I don't necessarily agree with saying it's coming. I think a lot of it is already here. What I find very, very frustrating is they say, oh, let's look at the inflation numbers. What do? They take out energy, they take out food, and then they say, oh, okay, the rest of the costs of rising costs are not there. Wait a second. How much of our income, of our money that we have, go to food and go to gas? I think
it's roughly 20%.
Okay. Now, roughly 20%. Thank you very much for that percentage. But think about this, Bill, for a moment. Okay? I have a car, okay? And I used to fill it up in gas. It cost me $25 to fill it up once a week. Gas when it was much, much lower. Now gas is $100. That next to me. Oil is $100 a barrel. Now it's costing me $75 to buy that tank of gas or fill it up during the course of that week. Well, now I have $50 less that I have in my pocket to spend on other products and other income. So how can I not be affected by the rising cost of energy and by the rising cost of food? I'll give you a very, very unknown fact. Back in the Clinton years, there was a senior economist called Boskin, and he came up with a formula that has been adopted by Republicans and Democrats alike because it really keeps the government's cost much, much lower. What they've done is they say, wait a second, cost of a car today, let's say last year, is $20,000. The cost of it this year is $22,000. You would think, hey, that's a 10% increase in the value of the car. That should affect inflation. No. Wait a second. That car today for $22,000 has a different feature, or we've actually improved the car, which in effect keeps the value in the same terms equal to the $22,000 and the $20,000 car because they have different features, now is the same price. So they don't raise the inflation index, and in effect the government has lower costs, and then also this impacts on Social Security. Because if the inflation index is lower, they only have to increase, you know, their Social Security benefits based on that inflation number.
Wow.
By them keeping the number artificially lower, in effect, they have to pull out less money. So I do not believe, to take the long way around, I don't believe inflation is basically under control. I think we're going to have it. If we don't have a problem, we will have problems.
And Joel, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Joel, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about IMEX, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Okay, the internet is www.imexfx.com. Okay, and they can reach us on phone number 732-583-7888.
That is great. Joel, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Bill, I appreciate having me.
Take care now.